And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, man, we've got the week off for NFL football this year, so we've got another weekend here, and then everything cranks up. But we do have a full slate of college football, and I don't know about you, but I'm pretty fired up about it.
Yeah, pretty fired up about a ton of games. I mean, it's everything that you want. Labor Day weekend is the official kickoff to the season, and so it's loaded. From Friday to Monday, we have top teams playing, top prospects playing. So, you know, as a scout, this is exactly what we want a perfect weekend to be.
Yeah. By the way, as we kind of get into this and what we're looking forward to in the season, were you someone that ever pulled off the double dip? Like this weekend, I'm not doing it, but I did it a bunch as a scout where you could get a twofer. You could get two games in one day. Like I think SC plays San Jose State at like 2:00, and then you could conceivably get over the Rose Bowl and see LSU, UCLA, I think at 5 or 6 or whatever time they play.
You know, I've done that in the past. I'm not saying that I necessarily enjoyed it. That's a lot of ball in person. Yeah.
But you get those body types. You four teams body types done.
You do get four teams body types. I like to do that kind of stuff like on the couch. I like to have my snacks. I like to have my drinks. I like to make sure that at halftime I can go and make a little run, get some more food and refresh, hydrate, and just make sure that I enjoy the night. But I have done that. Like I think I've done it. Man, the last time I did it was. This would tell you way back. Remember when St. Mary's had a football program?
I took a recruiting visit to St. Mary's.
Yeah, St. Mary's had a football program. Derek Mason was the defensive coordinator and the pro liaison, who I think he's now the D coordinator at Auburn, used to be the head coach at Vanderbilt. Yeah. He was the DC. I think I did a game at St. Mary's to see, do you remember Joey Thomas, cornerback from Montana State?
Montana State.
Yeah, so I went to see
him. I think he wore number 24.
24, 22, one of those things.
Long arms.
And then I think I went and saw either Cal or Stanford later that night because it was Bay Area. So done the twofer. Yeah. You really got to be on your P's and Q's. You got to get all like double parking things, credentials, requires a lot of organization. And I think when you do that, I might have changed hotels so that I started the day in one place, checked out, went to the game, and then finished at a hotel that was closer to the final destination.
Yeah, I think people don't realize, too, when you go to live scout a game, rarely would you ever stay for the entire game. Like, you get there for warm-ups, so you can go down on the field, get the body types, because you can't see that on tape. So you get down there, you write all your body type descriptions of the players. Then I want to be able to watch him move. I want to watch him on, you know, when the game starts. You can kind of just zero in on certain guys, and then you can, you know, watch how they interact on the sideline, just things you can kind of pick up from a live exposure. But then after 2 quarters, maybe 3 quarters tops, you're like, okay, let's get out of here. We're going to get stuck in traffic. I can watch this game on tape. Everything else I need to see, I'll see on tape. But you kind of go there I don't think people understand. I think you go there to take in the whole game. Like, that's not really what you're doing in a live scouting setting.
See, now, DJ, now you're going to have a lot of people mad at scouts. When scouts are complaining about, like, some of the things that scouts know that they need, you've now kind of pulled back the curtain.
Pull it back.
And have told people that, hey, okay, so scouts complain about not being able to get credentials to games, being put out in the stands. If the spread is not necessarily up to standard, you know,
you're talking about food.
We're talking about food. Yeah. Food. If the food spread is not up to standard, we might complain a little bit about it. And then you're telling that we have all these complaints, but we're leaving right after you get the cookie at the end of the halftime. Sure. That's basically what you're saying. Wait to see what's there. Okay, what do we have today? Oh, we got barbecue. We got baked beans. Oh, we got a little peach cobbler. Okay, I'll stay through halftime. Maybe the first possession of the third quarter, then we'll pack it up and we go.
the other thing that when you go, you want to see some teams from outside your area because some years certain areas might just be down. Maybe you scout the Northeast and maybe there's just not a lot of players up there that year. Well, all of a sudden you see a team come in from, you know, Oklahoma comes up there, or, you know, whoever comes, some team from the South, Clemson goes up there and plays. It's always good to see, like, kind of, you put your eyes on some different players from different region and you kind of reset your eyes a little bit, because sometimes if you're just in that little box, just looking at players in your area and your area alone, you begin to think some guys are Joe Montana, you know, when in fact you're not so much.
Yeah, not so much at all. It's one of those things. And I think what is great about that, when you talk about, like, particularly early in the season, when you see guys and teams out of your area, it does give you a great perspective on what else plays. Because depending on if you work for a team that cross checks or if you cross check position, you don't really know what a first round corner in the SEC looks like compared to a first round corner in the Pac-12, particularly if you've never stepped outside of your area. So it's good to see what other players look like, because I believe it allows you to begin to have a better grading system. Like, hey, I really like this guy, but I'm not going to give him maybe the creme de la creme grade because I don't know what's lurking out there in the SEC. And so maybe I hedge my bet a little bit until I get a better feel for what's out there. Because it's always easy to come back and say, hey, I was very conservative on the first go round, the second go round. Here's my real grade. Here's what I feel about them.
All right. We're going to get into some individual players we're looking forward to watching this weekend specifically, and games we're looking forward to watching. But before we do that, something I wanted to hit on here, because I think this is a storyline that's going to emerge throughout the season. And one thing we try and pride ourselves on, I feel like we've done this a good bit of times on the show over the years, is we've been just a little bit ahead of kind of where everything was going and where the conversation was going, right? So I'm sure people are listening. I've heard, you know, this mentioned about super seniors. Because of the pandemic, there was an extra year granted of eligibility to players. So technically you could come back for your sixth year. In some cases, right, because of, you know, you got a red shirt. So now you get 5 years, you know, to play four. Now you got 6 years to play four. So now you can play 5 years. Now it's what's fascinating. I reached out to some teams across the country to find out, like, how many of these guys do they have? Like, how many super seniors are they playing with? And it would stand to reason that the bigger high profile programs would have fewer because they have an influx of these freshmen. Right. And so they want to just keep those five stars, you know, keep pumping in. And if you weren't good enough to go to the NFL at that point in time, then, you know, they're probably like, we can probably replace this guy with somebody younger. So maybe they wouldn't encourage the super senior philosophy. So I was just curious. I reached out, did a little bit of homework. So here's a couple examples. Louisville has six. So they have six super senior players. Kentucky, same state, has nine, which is a good amount of guys. App State, my alma mater, has 13, Buck. So here's the comparison. And I'm working. I've got to reach out to a bunch more people. I'm sure they'll come trickling in as we're going along here. Here's my comparison. You know how in the Olympics we talk about some of these other teams, like in basketball, might not be as talented as we are, but these teams have been together for a long period of time. So they can grow together. They understand what they're doing system wise. They understand the players they're playing with, the coaches. There's more continuity with those groups. So they're going to play above their head versus maybe a more talented team that's just been kind of quickly cobbled together. And so if you look around college football this year, I think this is going to level the playing field. Maybe this is a year where some of the teams, maybe in the back half of these Power Five conferences, are now all of a sudden more competitive with the top teams in their conferences because they're going to have a dozen or so older kids that have just played together for a long time. You could have offensive line where these, you know, three or four of these guys have played together for 6 years.
So here's what it reminds me of, DJ. I don't know if I've ever shared this with you. So when I was, I think, 14 years old, I played on a Pop Warner team called the North Raleigh Braves. We won the national championship in North Raleigh, Pop Warner.
Yeah.
We, in essence, played with a handful of super seniors. In Pop Warner, it was older but lighter.
All right. Yeah.
So
explain that for those that don't know Pop Warner.
So older but lighter means that you're an age older than the class that you're playing. So I was playing, I was 14, playing with like 12 and 13 year olds. But because I was older but lighter, I had a certain weight thing that you had to weigh in. I think maybe it was like 105 pounds. I could play down because my size says that I'm not big enough to go up. But, you know, from a maturity standpoint, it was slow motion. So we might have had three or four super seniors playing on that team. Well, I can tell you from a cognitive standpoint, the game is slower because I'm more mature. And much like you talked about in basketball, particularly when we look at the NCAA tournament and the Final Four,
it's a great
the example. Teams that are beginning to win the chip are the teams that have the older players, not necessarily the best players. The players that have hung around for 3 and 4 and maybe 5 years that have chemistry and continuity are winning. the super senior thing has certainly changed the way that people are thinking about building teams, and the transfer rules with the graduate transfers and those things. Right now, what we're seeing, there are fewer scholarships that are going to high school guys now, and teams are deliberately leaving 8-10 scholarships for transfers and graduate mm-hmm. players, because I get an older, more mature player that is more ready to play right now than a kid that's coming out of high school ready to go. And so for those that can understand and exploit the rule, they absolutely are benefiting from the super seniors.
Yeah, I think I want to say it was a Washington State was a big JC feeder, right? Yep. So they used to have, I think that was like the Mark Fields years, like going way back, like a bunch of those guys were all JCers that came in there. So everybody else is bringing in 25 high school kids and they're bringing in 20 junior college men, you know? So at that point in time, it's trying to find that advantage. And I think you hit it with the transfers. Teams are doing that. I think Arizona's got an ungodly amount of transfers. I know UCLA out here has got a bunch that have contributed. You're going to see USC against San Jose State on Saturday, and they're going to have a bunch of transfers. They're starting running back, starting receiver is going to be that kid from Memphis that can fly. He's Taj Washington. Keontae Ingram from Texas will be their starting back. Like, and you look all around the country, Georgia's got a bunch of transfers. Quality. They got the corner from Clemson that came in there. So you've got that with it, but I think that almost is kind of like a level playing field with the big boys, because Alabama's still cherry picking, you know, the top linebacker from Tennessee when he leaves. But when you're actually playing with kids that are older than everybody else out there, and you, like I mentioned, App State's got 13 guys that are older than the people that you're playing with, I think it really does kind of level the playing field. It's going to make it probably not going to be that different in like a Sun Belt conference, because I bet you there's a bunch of teams in the Sun Belt conference that brought a bunch of these kids back. But when you get the lower level of a Power Five, so if you've got the bottom of the Big Ten and they bring a bunch of guys back, but Ohio State lost a bunch of guys to the draft, like that, all of a sudden that gap can kind of narrow a little bit.
It absolutely can narrow. And when you talk about DJ, coaches that know that the clock is ticking on the turnaround efforts, they're going to go and find the graduate transfers or some of the super seniors that are out there and available. And so it is an opportunity for you really to get, I mean, a time-tested, tried-and-true player who has played games. Because as you know, the game as a senior versus the way it is as a freshman is so much slower. You understand it more. You've had experience. You've had reps. It's advantageous. And the teams that are able to kind of find the competitive advantage in the margins, those are the teams that we'll talk about. Oh, man, I can't believe this team is a top 10 team. But as you just pointed out, there are a ton of teams that went fishing in the graduate transfer / super senior pool this spring.
Yeah, and just mark it. Just remember as you're listening to this, just mark this down, because there's going to be a big upset this week. I don't know who it's going to be. There's going to be a big upset, and this is going to be a storyline that's going to emerge from that upset. They're going to go, they're going to dig into it, and they're going to go, wait a second, they've got all these super seniors. They're just more mature, and we didn't see it coming, but it happened. Trust me, you heard it. You heard it here.
Oh, it absolutely happened. It reminds me a little bit of how BYU would have some advantages, because they would have older players, because their guys had gone and served the mission. They would come back, and so now they're playing against 18, 19, 20-year-olds. And they have 24, 25, 26-year-old men playing on their offensive and defensive lines. The older player gives you an opportunity to have an advantage against some of these teams who have young rosters. And so it is definitely something that we need to keep an eye on, not only this weekend, but the rest of the season, because one of those super senior-laden teams is going to emerge as a team that is in the conversation for one of the playoff bids.
Yeah, the only difference is during the you know, time as they were getting older, instead of being on a missions trip in Wales, these guys have been in the weight room in the same facility with the same group of players. So like, that's the difference with those BYU teams with this. But anyways, it'll be fascinating to see what happens there. We've got some fun games. I thought we'd just kind of grab a couple games and look at some players you're looking forward to watching this year. And I think we could start off, Buck, with this evening. We're recording this on Thursday morning, And we get to see Ohio State and Minnesota kick off tonight. I was going to ask you, not a draft question, not about a guy that's going to be eligible for the draft this year, but Ohio State, new quarterback, CJ Stroud, is from out here, from Southern California guy, was an Elite 11. So tell me a little bit about him.
Okay, so CJ Stroud was actually my quarterback in Elite 11 a couple years ago. He actually had a couple of the guys that are on his team right now. The Fleming kid at wide receiver who has played, outstanding talent. CJ Stroud, literally, it's funny because I think we share this in common. There's a chess master out there named Seth Mikowski, who does a great job of working with quarterbacks and elite athletes in terms of training mental performance. Well, at the Elite 11, Seth, it was my first time meeting him, but Seth was working with all the Elite 11 quarterbacks on using chess as a vehicle to unlock some of the competitive things in your mind. DJ, I'm going to tell you, CJ Stroud took to Seth and the chess playing unlike anybody that I've ever seen. And it came on the heels of Deshaun Watson and a couple other guys really digging into this chess thing. CJ Stroud digs into it. It gives him a clarity of mind and purpose and focus on the field. And let me tell you, man, at that event, he was the best quarterback at the event in terms of just how he played, how confident he was, how decisive he was. I remember after being around him, I text Ryan Day and was like, man, you got a dude.
How big is he, Buck?
You know, I think he's like 6'2", 6'3", kind of slender. But, you know, DJ, here's what I would say. Like, when we look at him, for those who like Spencer Rattler and are willing to kind of maybe ignore the slender frame, I think you'll have to do the same thing with CJ. And I think CJ might be a little more built than Spencer, but they're in the same category. But, man, his arm talent and his processing speed in terms of his ability to process information, see it, deal, rip with confidence, he's terrific. And I think Ohio State is in for a treat because they went from one quarterback who was a high-end player in Justin Fields to now they have another one who should be in line, but in a different way because he's not quite the athlete in terms of running that Justin Fields was.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what they look like. Not an easy start there either. Against Minnesota, they're against the Golden Gophers at Minnesota. You know, that place will be rocking. So that'll be a fun one to watch. That's this evening. My alma mater plays tonight.
So oh, yeah. Nice
to see them on ESPN. I had to represent here with my my little logo. I get everything gets turned around on this. But we've got what do we have? We play Coastal Carolina.
East Carolina.
No, East Carolina, ECU.
East Carolina. Yeah. No.
By the way.
Don't you call it ECU. You know what they call it in North Carolina. They call it EZU because it may not be the most challenging. Oh, you didn't know that?
EZU? That's what they call it? No, EZU, here's what I know about ECU. I call it ECU. Is that I know I can get, you know, an interesting tasting barbecue right off the campus there.
Yeah,
right. Is Bridges Barbecue, is that I'm trying to remember if that's where is Gardner Webb?
Oh gosh, you would ask me Gardner Webb. I know it's somewhere in
that's
there.
Your state, Buck. Yeah. I'm looking this up because Bridges Barbecue was either outside Gardner Webb or outside it's in Shelby. So Bridges Barbecue is in Shelby. I think that's where Gardner Webb is. Right?
You know what? Hold on. No, yeah, Shelby is down near Charlotte. The barbecue places that I'm seeing in Greenville, I'm seeing Backyard Barbecue. I mean, we just give them free advertising. Doesn't matter. M&J's Wings, Home Team Barbecue. Yeah, Bridges Barbecue is out there in Shelby. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember the barbecue place, but there's good barbecue. It's that vinegary. It's a vinegary.
Yeah, so North barbecue, Carolina barbecue. Though. So there's a difference because I would contend that North Carolina barbecue is the best, but there's a difference between North Carolina barbecue, Texas barbecue, and then Kansas City barbecue.
Yeah.
North Carolina, it is a vinegar-based barbecue, pulled pork. It has been on the smoker, the skewer, just turning over and over and over again. When you go to Texas, it's all about the meat and the rubs and the application that comes to it. Kansas City is all about the sauce.
The sauce.
It's all about the sauces and those things. And so great barbecue at all those places, but very distinct flavors. And in North Carolina, what you do is, if it's real barbecue, you get your little sandwich. They put a little coleslaw on it, a little hot sauce, a little Texas Pete or Tabasco, and away we go. Hush puppies. Oh, yeah.
That's what I remember more. I couldn't tell you who I scouted at Gardner Webb, but I can remember going to Bridges.
But that's always you, right? Like, I think, if we could do, like, one of those shows, Like, we would go on a road trip to games, but the show would be a foodie show. It would be all about, like, hey, where did we stop and eat? We ate here. We had this. We had barbecue. And, oh, don't stop it. Stop at this ice cream shop on the way out. And
I'll tell you, if you got 20 scouts in the room and I gave you a school, right? And I just said, like, watch this. Hold on. I'm going to write this down. This is a sidetrack here. We'll get back to the players in just a second, but I got to write this down. Okay. I'm going to say the school. I'm not going to tell you the restaurant. I'm going to say the school, and you tell me where you, if you can remember where you would go eat there. Okay, you ready? Fresno State.
The dog.
Don't say it. I was going to write it down. We're showing that we're on the same page.
My bad.
Yes. Doghouse. Just ruined my whole thing, Buck. Jeez. I was going to show off about how we're on the same page here. I couldn't even write the D. Good night. Yeah, no, yeah. Well, hold on. Don't say it. Now right. I'm going to give me another shot. Without saying it, let me write it down. What would you order there at the doghouse? Don't say it yet.
Gosh, man, that's such a long time ago.
What do you order? What are they known for? What do you have to get there?
I quit eating this stuff, so I can't even remember what they're known for.
You've been out of the game too long. If you don't, now you're going to kill. Now you're not going to get this? Really?
I can't remember. Come on.
This is like the game show. I just show you my answer.
I can't.
Can I give you a hint?
I can't remember.
It's a sandwich. It's a sandwich.
I mean, I knew it had to be a sandwich. I didn't think it was like a leg. Like, what kind of sandwich would it be? Oh, yeah. How did I know? A tri-tip sandwich. How did I?
What is wrong with you? You've been out of the scouting game too long, man.
Oh, so look, here's the funny thing. Last summer during the pandemic, I was taking my son all over to colleges. Yeah. I took him to Fresno State and I took him to the doghouse.
Yeah.
And he got a tri-tip sandwich. I can't believe I messed it up.
Yeah, you messed that up bad. That's terrible. All right, get back to some players here. All right, you're Tar Heels. I'm looking forward to seeing Sam Howell. Lost a bunch of wideouts, lost his running back. So all that skill's gone. You would probably know better than I would, Buck. I mean, do they have enough around him that he's going to be able to show off a little bit?
Yeah. Keep an eye on Josh Downs. Downs is a wide receiver kind of emerged. I want to say he had a couple of touchdowns in the bowl game in the Orange Bowl. And then he is a big time breakout prospect player to kind of keep an eye on. For Sam Howell, I'm really excited to see him because DJ had a chance to watch him at Elite 11. In Elite 11, it was him, Spencer Rattler, Malik Willis. And when you watch Sam Howell throw, he throws it like a pro, man. Mm-hmm. Like, he can change speeds. He has all the pitches in the bag in terms of, hey, if I need to fire the fastball, I got change up. I have all of those other things. The best thing I would say about Sam Howell is not even his physical ability, his intangibles. He leads the right way. Like, when the NIL deal came, when you talk to people around the program, he was real reluctant because he didn't want to create divisions and chasms within the team. So the first thing he did is, one, he did something where he was able to feed some people around town with that. But two, he also included a bunch of his teammates and all those other things in those deals. And so when I heard that, I was like, he's wired the right way. And, you know, the quarterback position is a leadership position. It's more about the other stuff than the pure arm talent. He has some intriguing leadership qualities that will make people fall in love with him as a franchise player. Now you just want to see if the game matches up to what the intangibles are.
No, I'm anxious to see him too. To me, I like what I've seen. The Baker Mayfield comp's kind of out there a little bit. I saw that when I watched him. So Baker made a noticeable leap in that last year at Oklahoma, and I'm anxious to see what Sam does. You mentioned him briefly there, Spencer Rattler. Again, Tulane, it should be a boat race here. But what do you want to see from Rattler compared to what you saw last year?
You know, the thing about Rattler that I want to see has little to do with how he plays and more to do with the stuff that we need to be at the game to see. I need to see how Spencer Rattler interacts with his teammates. I need to see his interactions and conversations with his coaches. I need to figure out if he is a player that, like, understands it and gets it from a leadership standpoint, or is he the too cool for school hotshot prospect that sometimes comes out in social media posts and things that we've seen on QB1 and some of the other stuff. To me, his evaluation is less on the field and more off the field in terms of what kind of leader is he going to be when he gets to the National Football League?
Yeah, and to me, what I want to see on the field, start with consistency, but I'll use another C word. Just I want to see a crisp version of Spencer Rattler. There were times last year, when I go back through my notes, he was drifting too much. There's times when you're going to get pressure and you got to kind of drift away from pressure, and there's a time and place for that. When you've got clean pockets, which at Oklahoma you get a lot of, he's got to grind his cleats in the ground and deliver the ball accurately. And I mean, talking about ball placement, I don't care about completions. I want ball on the right shoulder so we can do something with it after the catch. So that's what I want to see more consistently. And when they played some teams that got after him a little bit, that did heat him up, that did send pressure looks, I didn't think he necessarily handled that all that well. So I don't anticipate we'll see that with Tulane, that they'll be able to put that type of pressure on him. Maybe it's a couple snaps here or there. But I'm going to keep an eye when I watch this game or when I watch this tape early next week. Is he grinding his cleats in the ground when he has clean pockets? And is he showing the awareness when he's got people coming? And a lot of those things, Buck, are just playing, right? He needs to play and get more reps and more experience, and then you'll see that natural improvement.
Yeah, when I think of Spencer Rattler, in my mind, I think of Steph Curry, right? I think of Steph Curry in terms of Steph Curry is able to balance the sizzle with the steak, meaning that he can give you the flashy, flamboyant play, but he's also has a game that is very deeply rooted in the fundamentals. Spencer Rattler sometimes for me skews a little more towards the flash, and sometimes I need the fundamental. So can he kind of live in both of those worlds where he can be that Pat Mahomes-esque highlight reel worthy player, but when the game gets down to it, he can play in a very fundamental, old-school fashion where, hey, it's a big drive. We need to play. I need to play kind of like the quote-unquote right way and play and be able to do it. I need him to live in both of those worlds as opposed to just being the flash and dash guy.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch, see how that all comes together. I want to mention briefly here, I know we don't do the NIL stuff, Buck, but if I could sponsor one college player as like the Move the Sticks college player this year, I'm going to nominate a guy named Micah Roth, who is a linebacker for Oregon. He's not a starter, but he is a, I think I've told you about him before, but he's a close family friend. He was at Azusa Pacific and started a couple years there as a linebacker. Azusa Pacific, as a lot of Division II programs did through the pandemic, they dropped football. So he ended up transferring up to Oregon. So he's up there, and they've got that talented linebacker group with guys you've known going back to high school.
Justin Flo
and Sewell, Noah Sewell. They've got, you know, big-time dudes. But he's up there working and grinding away, and I'm hopeful we get a chance to maybe see him get in against Fresno State. But he's a great kid, and you know, somebody that when you lose your football program as a Division II, man, it doesn't get much worse than that. And you just want to finish up. I think he's got 2 years to play. I'm saying him as an individual, but I'm sure there's lots of other players like him that were at places that through the financial difficulty, the pandemic, they lost their football program, and these kids had to scramble to try and find a place. So pretty cool landing spot for him up there at Oregon. So guys like that, easy to root for.
Yeah, easy to root for. I mean, look at him going up, like moving on up. That's the way to fall up. Azusa Pacific, I want to say home of the Nigerian nightmare.
Christian Okoye. Absolutely. Yeah,
like it was always a Division II team that we were talking about. So that's a good one. I am curious. You talk about Oregon. If we're going to stay at Oregon, Thibodeau. Kayvon Thibodeau, I want to see, man, I can't wait. People have already talked about this guy in terms of edge rusher being at the top. His speed, quickness, explosiveness, he's such a dynamic athlete. I think the one thing that throws you off when you watch him, particularly when you watch him on tape, you wonder how big is he? You know what I'm saying? Like he wears the low number, and then he has these arms, and he's so long that you just don't know how much mass he has on his frame. But being in LA and watching him, because I want to say he might have started out at Dorsey High School, goes to Oaks Christian, becomes one of the top recruits in the country, immediately makes his mark at Oregon, and he's a very mature kid when it comes to how he goes about his business. He has an opportunity. I mean, we always talk about quarterbacks at the top of the board. He has an opportunity if he plays right. He's going to be in that conversation as the number one overall player on the board whenever we do this.
Yeah, I look at the areas I want to see improvement, and that's what we're doing, right? These early games, the competition, we don't have that many super competitive matchups early in college football season. It just doesn't work out that way. But we want to see individual improvement from some of these top players. So with Thibodeau, things I'm keeping an eye on this game, I want to see how has he improved his arsenal hand moves. He won with just pure speed and power, you know, the combination of the two last year, which is what you know, that's where you start. That's the foundation. But has he developed an arsenal of moves? And then, you know, to me, just adding some more bulk on his frame, you know, that was you're talking about his body type. I want to see physically just what has he been up to? What does he look like compared to what we saw last year? But if he gets some bulk, and then now you add some hand moves to the burst and the get off that he has already, he's in the mix. He's going to be in the mix to go all the way up there. So looking forward to seeing them. Oregon plays Fresno State. That's on the Pac-12 network, so I don't have a login on that one. So we'll be waiting for the tape to come out. The Alabama-Miami game, Buck. So we've got, again, another young quarterback that I believe you had a chance to be around, right, going through the Elite 11 at Bama?
I've seen him. I haven't necessarily put my hands on him in terms of like some of the other guys that have come through. But I will say this about Bryce Young. Bryce Young comes from modern day. He has started his high school career up in L.A. at Cathedral High School, goes to modern day, has tremendous success, goes to Alabama, follows in the footsteps of Jalen Hurts and Tua and now Mac Jones. And he is the next Alabama quarterback that can kind of change the narrative on how we used to always talk about Alabama quarterbacks when we were working for teams. DJ, we talk about not scouting the helmet, but the quarterback who always played at Alabama was always the game manager. Everything around him is good. All he has to do is be the caretaker, and everything works itself out. And Alabama quarterbacks weren't taken high because of that view of them. Now, when you have Jalen Hurts is going to start this weekend, Mac Jones is going to start this weekend, Tua Tagovailoa is going to start this weekend, you're going to have two things that happen. One, we're going to see Bryce Young play, and we get a chance to see him play and make our early assessments on what he is and how he compares to the three that departed. But then we're going to get a chance to see those three guys play in the National Football League. And we're going to be able to kind of separate their talent from what was around them in college. And how we view those three could impact how we view Bryce Young, rightly or wrongly. We don't want to scout the helmet, but naturally when you have so many guys come out of the same university at the same position, you end up scouting the helmet.
Yeah, the words that come up when I talk to folks at Alabama about him too, ultimate point guard. They just said he is a distributor. He sees it. He's really smart. He sees everything really clearly. Not the biggest guy, you know, good, not great in terms of arm strength, but knows where to go with the football, and it's on time and it's accurate, which when you have dudes, that's what you want. So anxious to see that Alabama team. I'll add, as we'll kind of whip through some of these other games here real quick, talking to people that have been through Alabama, and that's, you know, talking to buddies in the scouting profession, said this looks like an Alabama defensive line. They haven't had that defensive line in a couple years that kind of looked like Bama. He said this group up front defensively kind of looks again like an Alabama defensive front. So, and I'm anxious to kind of learn more about these guys. I haven't studied their defensive line yet, but you know it when you turn on the TV and you're like, okay, they come trotting out of the tunnel and you go, that looks a little different.
So two things. One, I would like to encourage everyone who listens to the podcast to pull up this article on The Athletic about Alabama and their offensive evolution. DJ, it's a fascinating read. I don't know if Bruce penned it, but it is a fascinating read. It talks about how Nick Saban came to the point of just evolving this offense, like after he was having problems with the no huddle, and just how Bill O'Brien back in the day played a role in this evolution, and now it's come full circle with him. But it's that and Lane Kiffin and Sark and all that. It's a fascinating read. Secondly, I think what's so scary about Alabama is you just sat there and said, hey, you know, we haven't seen a dominant defensive line from this team for the last couple of years, yet we've seen Alabama continue to dominate as a national power, right? Yeah. We've seen them dominate on the strength of their offense. And now we're talking about, oh, well, you know, they may have to change it up. They may have to lean on their defense with a point guard playing quarterback and just kind of manage it and do it a little differently. It just speaks to the football factory that is Alabama, that they can find a way to whip you in a bunch of different ways.
Yeah, we'll see Derek King. I have a feeling he might just get kind of swallowed up by that front in that Miami-Alabama game. We'll see. We'll see how that comes together.
I'm worried about this one. As someone who used to love watching the U, I'm worried about this one because they just have a tough time stopping the run. Even though Manny Diaz does a great job with his zone blitz stuff, man, he just has a tough time when people run right at them. And if the Carolina Tar Heels can run for 700 yards on them.
Just for fun, if App State wins their game against the Pirates, the ECU Pirates, and if North Carolina takes care of VTech, let's get together on this just to have some fun. If Miami gets their doors blown off, let's both tweet Reggie Wayne, just the eye emoji. Just like the eye emoji. That's it. Don't say anything. Don't say anything, but just tweet in the eye emoji. Because we both know Reggie, and he'll lose it. He's going to lose it.
He's very fragile. I'm sure he'll find a way to be on the sideline. My dog will find a way to get down there and support his crew. But it's been a minute. Because they keep trying to bring him back. The turnover chain, one and two, bringing him back. Black uniforms.
The Padres stole the turnover chain.
Oh, the Padres. Your poor Pies, man.
Hey, we're right in the mix for the wild card. We're still alive.
I know. You peaked too soon, though. Like, I just feel for you. I watch you go into this emotional roller coaster on Twitter, just up and down, the highs and lows. I've been hiding.
All right, game of the week. Well, before we get to the game, there's a couple really good games here. When we look at the Sunday games, Notre Dame, Florida State, which will be good. I know a lot of scouts like the Notre Dame tight end, the Notre Dame running back. You hear a lot of buzz on them. I love the Notre Dame safety. He's fun. Hamilton. I did him over the summer. We got LSU, UCLA. We've talked a little bit about that double dip. If you're a fan in Los Angeles, I promise you probably be able to pull it off. Go to the SC game and go to the UCLA game. 2-for-1 special. I know it's Kent State. It's a terrible opponent. Texas A&M is going to roll. Of all the scouts I've talked to that have been through all of the SEC, right, and because scouts are worried about restrictions with the pandemic kicking back up, they all were aggressive in going out during two-a-days and really trying to get to as many schools as possible. When I asked, like, where are all the dudes at, right, Texas A&M comes back more than anybody else. So Texas A&M is number 6 in the country. I would not be surprised if Texas A&M won the whole dang thing. And they just redid Jimbo Fisher's contract. I almost think $9 million a year. But I almost think that the people there are looking at this roster going like, you know, we win the national championship this year. Jimbo is going to want $15 million a year. Like, let's just go ahead and just get it done. But I guess they are loaded. They said they look better than everybody else that they wouldn't look at during the preseason.
Well, the one thing that we know about Jimbo Fisher, the team is going to look the part. The teams that he had at Florida State certainly looked that way. Now you give him an opportunity to recruit Texas and really do it in a major way in the SEC, they're going to look like a heavyweight contender. The big thing for them is, are they going to be able to be the juggernaut that can knock off Alabama? Because in the West, they got to deal with Alabama. They got to deal with LSU. LSU is a different animal, but that beast that is Alabama, we'll see. We know Jimbo Fisher wants to take them head on, but that's who they're chasing.
All right, last one. I say this one. This is the best game of the week. Top five matchup: Clemson, Georgia. Again, I kind of going off of what you know, talking to people that have been through these schools, and they DJ Ugalele. I'm saying that right? Mm-hmm. Right? Did I get that right? He's a freak show. Everybody says you go out to practice, he looks different than everybody else in the country. Like, he is the most talented. He's not draft eligible yet.
Yeah, he's not even close. He's sophomore.
But he's the super freshman
or whatever you would be. Yeah.
The interesting thing is, they said the rest of the Clemson roster, they don't think it looks as good as the Clemson teams of the last five to six years. They said to me the quarterback's going to have to kind of carry that group. There aren't the same amount of dudes that they've had, which I thought was kind of interesting. And they're going Georgia. You know, they got people all over the place on that group.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a name to keep an eye on. Wide receiver who will be a freshman. I don't know if he's in the rotation to play or not, but he was DJ's high school teammate, and he's one of my son's best friends, Bo Collins. Bo Collins comes from St. John's Bosco. And DJ, when you talk about a quote-unquote show pony, he is a show pony. 6'3", 6'4", body beautiful, long arms. Caught a touchdown, I want to say, in the spring game. I wouldn't be surprised if he's not in the mix making plays, because Clemson plays their young guys. And as you talk about it, they need young guys to come and contribute, because they lost Etienne. They lost Amari Rodgers. We'll see what
they get. Justin Ross back. That'll be good. Yeah.
And they need him. He has a chance to be a number one receiver. We'll kind of get a chance to see that. But then on the other side and dealing with Georgia, I mean, we just talk about it. Like those teams are just built different, you know, like they've always been a team that has always had the look, had the athletes, the size up front on offense and the defensive line, athletes and stuff on the perimeter. But let's see. Like, I think this would be a great game in terms of watchability. But from a scouting perspective, man, there are a ton of athletes that you're going to like on the field.
That game's going to be in Charlotte, Bank of America Stadium, and that is 4:30, the highlight game of the week. That'll be on ABC. So looking forward to watching it. I mean, Buck, we could go on for a long time here. To me, I just can't. My favorite times is early next week when I can pull out, you know, I guess I'm not allowed to say what. I'm going to pull out my device and be able to watch all of the video. Mm. Maybe not a league sponsor. Maybe not a league sponsor. Pull out my device and be able to watch. Yes. Pull up the college games and be able to watch the
L22. I know what you're saying. I understand because normally I think league sponsor would be like the Microsoft Surface or something like that.
Something very similar to that. We'll get it going. I'm looking forward to that. All right. Nabil went to the University of Miami. He wants us to know that because he's mentioned it 9 times in the chat here on the side while we're doing this. Nabil, I would advise you not to watch that game. It ain't going to end well, bro. And you know what?
There might be a time for his MMA workout. Go for the MMA workout, Buck, in the first half.
Buck, you know why I'm going to be really locked in on that Miami game? Because if you think Reggie's going to hear it from me when they lose by 40 to Alabama, you know who they play week 2?
Who? App State? Oh, so they're gonna stagger them and your guys get to knock them out?
I need Alabama just body punch, body punch, body punch, body punch, and then our 13 super seniors come rolling into town.
Now, are they coming to Boone or you guys have to
go to the – Oh, we go to the U. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Y'all
don't... But see, this is what you don't realize. We've got a bunch of Florida kids, as you know, with the chip on their shoulder because Miami didn't want anything to do with any of them. And then they get to go back home to Florida and go handle business. So we'll see. I just need Alabama could do us a big solid here and just try and beat them up pretty good here in this game.
I mean, they need to get beat up a little bit.
God, Nabil, you would never hear the end of it from me. Nabil, you wouldn't even be allowed to text in the chat during the show if we beat Miami down there. I'm just telling you that right now. That's it. You can just not even the Packers. We're not even let you talk about your Packers anymore if we go down there and beat Miami.
No, the Packers have to go to Jayville next week to play the Saints. That's going to be an interesting one for them. I won't talk about it, but that'd be an interesting one.
Nabil said he's wearing his turnover chain. In some ways, I don't doubt it.
And I absolutely believe it.
All right. Anything else you want to add before we jump out of here, Buck?
No, that's it, man. Guys, enjoy the weekend. Take some notes. We should have a fun podcast when we get back next week.
And for those that have made it all the way through the episode to the end here, that means that you're like the hardcore diehards. We appreciate you. And I would encourage you, if you haven't already, jump on and give us a rating and a review there on Apple Podcasts. Those help. We appreciate you guys. All the positive feedback we got on social media over the last month, it seems like you guys have been really, really kind, enjoying what we're doing. So we appreciate that. Do us a solid if you can and drop us a rating and review. And in the meantime, we'll be back next week. We'll be able to preview all the NFL slate, talk about players we're looking forward to. We've got a really, really, really fun time of year to stay together on this thing. So looking forward to it. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.